Welcome to the Poem of the Week. Each week, our poems are intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark A. Bell. Gentlemen.
Hello, Mark.
Hey, Mike.
But before we talk about this particular poem, tell me something about Ireland, where you're now on sabbatical, with regard to opiate use. Is heroin as an illicit drug common there? Is overprescription of opioids common? How does it differ from the United States?
Well, certainly in urban areas in like Dublin, certain neighborhoods in Dublin, some of my colleagues at RCSI work in those neighborhoods as GPs. There are significant problems with heroin addiction. And so, you know, that's definitely out there. And it overlaps with a fairly large homeless population in Dublin. And Dublin's a very expensive city to live in as well. And so you have people in marginal housing or poor housing or no housing at all. But yeah, so heroin is an issue here. I don't know the prevalence percentage kind of things between US and Ireland. I do know that opiate prescribing and overuse of opiates and overprescribing is, my impression, is much less of a problem here, has been much less of a problem. Physicians have really consistently not prescribed huge amounts. And when I describe some of the amounts that, you know, I've seen patients on, you know, that my colleagues react sometimes with, you know, a bit of shock and amazement that, you know, this would go on. And I think, isn't the statistic that the U.S. uses about 80% of opiates that are made in the world? I mean, that doesn't leave a whole lot for all of Europe, let alone little Ireland.
By way of introduction to this particular poem, MAT, M-A-T, which is medication-assisted treatment for opioid addiction, consists of either treatment with an opioid agonist or an antagonist, and usually some sort of adjunctive psychosocial treatment. This has become sort of first-line treatment for most patients. And as we've been talking about, major problem in the United States, I mean, listeners would have to have been sort of under a rock for the past year or two. It is now responsible for about 70,000 deaths, according to the CDC in the United States. We have two major MAT drugs. One is methadone, and we won't talk about that today. The other is buprenorphine. It's a partial mu opioid agonist. It is thought to reduce illicit opioid use when used in the long-term treatment of patients with opioid dependence. In contrast to methadone, buprenorphine can be prescribed in a doctor's office in the U.S. for medically supervised opioid withdrawal and, more importantly, for maintenance treatment. It's available in a lot of different formulations. These opioid agonists suppress craving. They suppress withdrawal symptoms. They block the acute effect of other opioids. They're really not a home run, but they're enormously helpful. Treatment with these opioid agonists at an appropriate dose allows patients really to return to a very productive life and engage in the appropriate social behaviors and get back to being husbands and wives and uncles and aunts and fathers and mothers and all that sort of good stuff. And in fact, the recommendations are that once a patient is stabilized on an appropriate dose, they can drive and operate machinery and any of those things. So you found a poem. It was published in Lancet in 2019. It starts on page 778, and it attempts to answer the question, do monthly depot injections with buprenorphine decrease narcotic use in patients with moderate to severe opioid use disorders? Mark.
Yeah, very topical, very important research. And this was a study in adults under the age of 65, and they all had moderate to severe opioid use disorder for at least 3 months, and they were all actively seeking treatment. After an active run-in period in which everyone got sublingual buprenorphine naloxone, and that was mainly to identify patients with allergy to it, they randomized 500 patients with no allergic reactions, mild withdrawal symptoms, and mild cravings to get either placebo, buprenorphine 300 milligrams injected monthly for 2 months, followed by 100 milligram monthly injections, or buprenorphine, again, 300 milligrams injected monthly for 2 months, followed by 300 milligram monthly injections. So the difference there between the two active treatment groups was the higher dose in the 3+ month injections. All the patients also got individual drug counseling. They followed them for 24 weeks, and patients provided urine for drug testing and completed a variety of scales that assessed their use of substances, withdrawal symptoms, and cravings. So by the end of the study, there was a massive dropout rate, unfortunately, about 2/3 in each of the treatment groups, both the treatment and placebo groups. At the end of 24 weeks, only 5% of the weekly urine samples in the placebo group had confirmed abstinence, compared to about just over 40% in the low and high dose buprenorphine patients, respectively. Their secondary outcome, the proportion achieving over 80% abstinence, occurred in only 2% with placebo, compared to not quite 30% in the low and high dose buprenorphine groups. So the number needed to treat for that outcome was about 4, and the dose didn't seem to matter. So that higher dose in the, you know, out months of 3 months beyond didn't really seem to make a difference. Headache was the most common side effect, about 6%. Basically, number needed harm of about 30 or 35, so not too big a deal. There was also some constipation, nausea, and itching at the injection site. So bottom line, in this study of patients with moderate to severe opioid use disorder who were seeking treatment and were able to achieve short-term abstinence, monthly injections did help to maintain opioid abstinence for up to 24 weeks. But again, a high dropout rate, and you know, certainly a challenge to keep patients engaged with this.
So very interesting. The high dropout rate is obviously concerning. The fact that 30% or so of folks ended up with a significant benefit, you know, may sound disappointing, but you know, that's 30% compared to nothing. It's a big jump. I guess the question is, how does this compare with, you know, the old standby methadone? And the problem with methadone programs, at least on the West Coast, is that they tend to be incredibly rigid. And, you know, you have to show up at this between, you know, this hour. And if you don't show up, you don't get your drugs. And so they're almost forcing people to either participate at this very rigid level or drop out. This seems much more forgiving. The fact that there are 2/3 dropout, you know, I'd want to know, you know, someone should do a study looking at those 2/3. What were the reasons for dropout? Given the side effects, obviously, those weren't driving people away from the drug. I suspect it was just more their addiction, right?
I would suspect so. And, you know, a chaotic lifestyle and problems with, you know, it wouldn't be so much transportation. I mean, this is a once monthly injection, which is, you know, really, like you said, a huge advantage over these, you know, having to show up for all these methadone clinic appointments. So, that's, I think, a really important question. And how can we engage patients? How can, you know, what other kind of support do they need beyond a monthly injection? You know, they did get counseling, but, you know, do they need people contacting them? Do they, you know, are there living situations that need to change? There's so many questions. It's such a complicated, multifactorial kind of problem.
Thanks, Mark. We'll talk with you for another poem next week.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Mike.
That's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. Please join us again next week for another medical poem.